The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to Real Recognition Radio, a program designed to promote a positive work environment. Your hosts are Roy Saunderson and S. Max Brown. In this hour, you will be motivated to motivate, increase morale, productivity, loyalty, and reduce turnover. Learn how some companies get it while others don't. Now, here are your hosts, Roy and Max.
Welcome to Rideau's Real Recognition Radio, the show that's all about building relationships, inspiring greatness, and creating a workplace where people can thrive. I'm Max Brown, along with my colleague and friend, Roy Saunderson, and we're from Rideau's Recognition Management Institute. Roy, I'm really, really excited. I know we say this every week, but I'm particularly excited about the show we have today.
I know. I don't think I've ever thought of love this way, and it's both the scientific realms and yet its day-to-day applications that we need so desperately in our world today.
Well, and it's very interesting for listeners today who might have seen the title on Love 2.0. I'm encouraging you to think about how you could apply this in terms of your leadership specifically, because what we're talking about has practical application in many, many ways. And our author and guest today is none other than Dr. Barbara L. Fredrickson. Now, some might be wondering where they've heard this name, and her name is all over positive psychology in the world there, because in my opinion, she's one of the foremost thought leaders in that world, and she's a distinguished professor of psychology, investigator of the Positive Emotions and Psychophysiology Lab at the University of North Carolina. And of course, as we just mentioned, the new book, Love 2.0, How Our Supreme Emotion Affects Everything We Feel, Think, Do, and Become. Barbara is the leading scholar within social psychology, affective science, and positive psychology. As I mentioned before, I've heard her speak. I've seen her in waves. Her research centers on positive emotions and human flourishing and is supported by grants from the National. Her research and her teaching have been recognized with numerous honors, including the 2000 American Psychological Association's Templeton Prize in Positive Psychology, and her work is widely cited, and she's regularly invited to attend and give keynotes nationally and internationally. Of course, another one of her books is she's the author of Positivity, Top-Notch Research That Results in the 3-to-1 Ratio That Will Change Your Life, and one of the books that really brought me into the world of positive psychology and really got me thinking about how important this is as well. So, Dr. Fredrickson, thank you first and foremost for being on the show. I know you're very, very busy. We are delighted to have you here.
Oh, it's great to be here, Max. Thank you for the invitation.
Well, we're delighted, delighted, delighted. And I love this topic. You know, when I was first asked, you know, if I would take a look at this book and not share it until actually, you know, we were getting closer to a publication type, I didn't know what to expect because I didn't know what the topic was. You just said you're writing. And all of a sudden, I see this title, Love 2.0, and I went, what is this? It just totally rocked my world, and I really, really enjoyed the book. How do you think leaders and people in general, our listeners today specifically, will be better for hearing this show?
Well, I think that this new perspective on love really offers all of us new lenses through which to see any form of connection in our daily life. And it gives the tools and the know-how to create better health in ourselves and in others, and also to unlock the collective capacity of our teams and our organizations. So it really has wide-reaching effects that have gone unseen for so long.
What are some of those things we've taken for granted?
Well, one of the things that we don't really recognize is that love really affects us physically. Our moments of connection, even if they last just a micro moment, affect us physically in ways that put us on trajectories of health and growth and wisdom. And so, you know, if we really unpack what love is and see it as micro moments of connection, we're able to see its ripple effects in a much sharper way.
Why are these social connections so important for human beings to thrive? I think this is one of the things that even your book Positivity spoke about, but you've taken it, it seems, in this conversation.
Right. I think that, you know, all positive emotions, all sources of positivity are important. The research shows that they're all very potent nutrients for growth and health. But what we're discovering is the positive emotions that you share with other people, like in the moment, actually nourish your health and growth and wisdom more and better than any other source of positivity. So it's just it's potentially an exponentially larger effect there. We get a bigger payoff when we share our positive emotions.
Yeah, it's fascinating that this is so important. I mean, because we really do need each other to thrive. Isn't that true? I mean, we can do some things independent of one another, but basically that human need to connect, to bond, to actually have that social interaction is really, really important.
Right. And what I'm doing here is I'm knitting together relationship science and emotion science, and looking at how it is, well, we've known these two things. One, that positive emotions help people live longer, and mm-hmm. that social relationships help people live longer. Well, you know, lo and behold, they both work through each other. Our positive emotions mm-hmm. help us live longer through our relationships, and our relationships help us live longer through the positive emotions they offer. So we've really been looking at two sides of the same coin.
Yeah, and man, I really do appreciate actually that perspective on this. And to kind of set this up a bit, would you mind taking us to a story that's actually near the end of the book? But I really appreciated the story you shared about Jeremy and his realization of how this might be bigger for him in the way he actually does and applies his work.
Right. Oh, I'm so glad you like that story, because I think it really ties together so much, especially the, you know, organizational and team effects of positive connections. And Jeremy was one of my former students. He had been in a positive psych class of mine some years ago. And after he graduated from college, he took his first position with Teach for America, because he had really, as a student at a really elite university, he had felt that, you know, there's this major disconnect between sitting in a classroom and learning about social inequities when, you know, right down the road there are, you know, junior high school kids struggling to read, you know, something really simple. So he wanted to really do active, proactive work towards solving problems of social inequities by working for Teach for America, which takes, you know, budding leaders and puts them in kind of rural, low-performing schools so that they can get some first-rate teachers. And they Teach for America does this great mentoring, and he was super excited about this position. And early on, the administrators at the school where he was placed in a rural part of North Carolina, you know, took note of his great patience and his really high aspirations for even the lowest performing students, and they offered him his own classroom of a dozen of the lowest performing kids in the school.
Right.
And so these were kids who, you know, had extraordinarily low IQs, behavioral problems, all kinds of things standing in their way of success. And the thought was, well, here's this really, you know, zealous, patient, well-trained teacher. Let's see what he can do. And there was a really, Jeremy described for me this really painful realization he went through as he really, you know, faced the music of the disconnect between his high aspirations for himself and how he'd be able to sort of waltz in and fix problems of social inequity one classroom at a time. And
sure.
Then what was happening for his students, which was nothing. They were completely despondent. They wouldn't even look at him. They would barely talk. They'd mumble. You know, the worst he said was when they would, he'd pass out a test and some of them would just put their heads down. They wouldn't even try.
Right.
And then he started to really feel it. You know, he was stressed. He couldn't sleep. His hair was falling out. I mean, it was a really dark time for him. And, you know, he described it to me later as like the worst thing he'd ever encountered in his life. I mean, he's a young person, but still, it was the hardest challenge he'd ever faced, and he didn't know what he was going to do to turn it around. And then a couple things happened. One was he heard an interview by me on the radio, like his former professor. He's like, oh, right, there's that positive psychology stuff. You know, he admitted to me later that a lot of what we had learned in that class, he got it at an academic level, kind of at an abstract level, but he never thought he would actually use it. And then he put that together with a lot of the good mentoring he got from his TFA mentors and his mentors in the school. And he decided that he really needed to do a very serious positive emotions intervention for himself first and then for his class. And, you know, one of the things he did for himself is realize that he had been feeling sorry for himself for how difficult a classroom he'd been given, and decided to, you know, switch that around and say, this is an amazing opportunity. If I can make a difference here, it'll really matter. And so he really first started working on himself. And then he brought the, you know, to try to be more of a source of life and freshness, you know, because he was realizing that he was walking in kind of despondent as well, catching their mood. So he tried to be the change first. And then he did all kinds of things to try to get his students to connect with each other, trust each other, and open up. But one of the things that I think was most striking is that he stopped teaching math, and he started teaching them about emotions. He decided that it was worth the time to take a break from, you know, teaching the basics of what they would be tested on, to teach them about why he wanted to make a change in the classroom climate. And so he, you know, gave them lessons straight out of my positive psychology class, and helped them through experiential exercises feel, you know, how negative emotions can be so zapping of energy, and how positive emotions are really mild and they need our support to really take off. And eventually this just took off in his classroom. So, I mean, I won't go into the details of it, but the way he described it at the end, it was like he said, you know, when a student would get part of a math problem right, they'd be celebrating each other, saying, you go, girl. And,
yeah.
You know, he said, you know, it was like a church where shouts of hallelujah could come out from any row. And his words I loved, he says, it was like a party, except with math.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
This turnaround not only made the kids enjoy the class and they were able to see how math connected to their future, but they also performed extraordinarily well on their end of grade tests. They were in a school where across all the regular students in the school, there's a 50% pass rate on the math.
Right.
At the end of the year, these kids passed at a rate of 80%. So they surpassed the regular, you know, students who weren't identified as having special needs, and their families and the kids themselves were amazed at what they were able to accomplish, and, you know, really owned it that about the difference that they made. How I learned of it is that two of Jeremy's students wrote me a letter to thank me for teaching him how to teach them to be positive. So,
yeah, it's a great story.
In my conversations with Jeremy after this, and I interviewed him for the book, I was describing to him how I view positivity resonance as a really important and potent ingredient towards thriving in health and becoming the best versions of ourselves. And he linked that up with, oh, right, TFA always talks about classroom climate. But classroom climate is an abstract idea of describing sort of, you know, something in the aggregate. What does it feel like in general? Well, classroom climate is really made up of these micro moments where you share positive emotions with, you know, another in the class or with the whole class. So creating more of these micro moments is a way to create the positive classroom climate that, you know, he knew he had to find. And it worked. It really worked wonders.
Well, and that's what I love, is that it's creating these positive moments, these moments of elation or feel good about each other that sometimes we just kind of think, well, that's just how life is. But actually, the science behind it, and as you describe it, is called positivity resonance, right? This love, if you will, this feeling like, oh, I can trust you. And part of that has to do with the oxytocin, which we're going to have to get into. We're going to have to get into after this break, because it just goes way too fast. I apologize. But when we come back, I would love to continue this conversation. And, of course, we will continue this conversation for our listeners. This is Max Brown and my colleague and friend Roy Saunderson. And we're speaking with our guest today, Dr. Barbara Fredrickson. And you're listening to Rideau's Real Recognition Radio on the Voice America Business Channel. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Now you don't have to stay linked to your desktop or laptop. Take Voice America on the go and listen anywhere. Get our mobile app for iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android at the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
Relationships are the core of great businesses. Your employees are critical to the success of your business. Rideau helps you build positive relationships with your people. Rideau helps you inspire greatness in your people. We do it through the power of recognition and rewards. Rideau's clients are Intel, RBC Financial, Boeing, and Liberty Mutual. We're committed to our clients and our people. Together, Rideau and our clients create better workplaces, better businesses, and ultimately, a better world. Become a Rideau client. Find us at rideau.com. Rideau is the proud sponsor of Real Recognition Radio.
How do you become one of the best companies to work for? By appreciating people for who they are and recognizing them for what they do. That's real recognition. 82% of employees say that recognition or praise they receive at work motivates them to improve their performance. And companies who recognize their people outperform companies that don't by 30 to 40%. Those are real results. Become one of the best companies to work for. The Recognition Management Institute can help you get the results you need. For more information, visit realrecognition.com. That's realrecognition.com.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Real Recognition Radio with Roy Saunderson and S. Max Brown. This is what recognition is all about: getting real results in the workplace through meaningful recognition solutions. Now, let's get back to the program. Here are Roy and Max.
Welcome back to Rideau's Real Recognition Radio with myself, Roy Saunderson, and my friend Max Brown, and our guest today, Dr. Barbara L. Fredrickson, Distinguished Professor of Psychology at the University of North Carolina and the author of Love 2.0. And Barbara, as I've kind of glanced through your book and seen some of that biological connections, I'm really resonating with this whole concept. You know, when you lose someone who's super dear to you, you might even just hear about it, and there's this absolute physical ache in the area of the heart. And so when I read about this whole brain oxytocin vagus nerve connection, I even wondered if maybe that was some of the reasons why I literally physically ache when I hear some of those kind of news. Can you share with us a little bit more about this whole connection here between the brain and the hormones and the nerves here?
Right. Well, one of the things that's going on with a micro moment of positivity resonance is that an emotion, any emotion, is both a mind and body event. So, you know, it's not just a feeling state that's coloring your subjective experience or in your mind. It's deeply happening within the body as well. And the what I think is the most striking thing about these micro moments of shared positivity that I define as love is that in those moments, there's a wave of biological change, neurological and biological change, rolling through two or more bodies and brains at once. So it's not just happening in your body. There's a synchrony of the same kind of changes happening in another person's brain and body when you are really connecting and sharing a moment of mutual care and positivity. And there's evidence of this that comes from a lot of different laboratories, not just my own. In my own laboratory, we found that there's a synchrony in people's nonverbal behaviors when they feel like they really click or connect.
Yeah.
In other labs, they've shown that, you know, when people are really understanding each other well and really in a conversation where they're really on the same page, there's widespread mirroring of their brain patterns, not just in an isolated set of mirror neurons, that's sort of the language that we most frequently hear, but whole-scale patterns across the brain so that, you know, telling a gripping story and listening to a gripping story are leading to the same brain patterns overall. And we see that same kind of synchrony in oxytocin between two people when they're connecting too. So what I describe all this as is a biobehavioral synchrony. There's a moment of biobehavioral synchrony that accompanies a micro moment of positive connection. And that in a way is what knits us together in these potent moments.
Wow. And you know, and it's not something you can fake. I mean, it's more of a mirroring rather than someone just initiating these behaviors for the sake of trying to make it happen, right?
Exactly. Well, I think that we are, excuse me, just kind of natural sincerity detectors. The way our brains and bodies can register what another person feels is by mimicking those or mirroring those in our own body. We sort of emulate them, and then we kind of know what does it feel like to have smiled in that way. And if the smile is insincere, then when we simulate it, we know, oh yeah, that had a little bit of insincerity with it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you may not know it at a conscious, you know, labeling level, but when we catch each other's emotions in this way, because that's the way our brains and bodies are designed to echo and catch each other's emotions, we can catch the thread of it that's insincere. This is what makes us kind of innate sincerity detectors. So kind of just going through the motions of trying to, you know, synchronize your gestures with another person is the completely the wrong way to go about it, because it falls flat. It's got to come from it just emerging.
Okay, good point. That's good to capture that. Now, what about this good old vagus nerve that kind of goes from top to the bottom as far as connecting with the heart? And you talk about when you have a higher vagal tone, it actually creates more micro moments of love. So can we control that?
Actually, the evidence from our latest research suggests that you can. There's the vagus nerve, you know, is the 10th cranial nerve that connects the brain to the heart and other internal organs as well, but I'm really focusing on not the brain-heart connection here. And that is something that, when it's functioning well, researchers describe that as having high vagal tone, like having high muscle tone. It's
mm-hmm.
a good thing to have higher vagal tone, because that has been linked across a lot of different research labs. High vagal tone has been linked to better attention regulation, better emotion regulation, better glucose regulation, better immune regulation, and better cardiovascular rate. So whether it's a emotional well-being or physical health, high vagal tone is a good thing. And what we found is that people who start off with higher vagal tone are more able to create these micro moments of positive connection or micro moments of love in daily life. But we also found that when people increase their daily diet of these micro moments of love, they actually also increase their vagal tone. So there's a positive feedback loop or an upward spiral going on between vagal tone and our capacity and daily experience of love, where they build on one another. And that's why these micro moments of love are so powerful in putting us on a healthy path.
Wow, it's amazing, this whole connection here. How do we create that? I mean, like, obviously some of our listeners are going to be saying, you know, in the workplace, you know, I don't tend to think of love being a workplace phenomena. This is just only at home or with more intimate relationships. So you're taking a much more broader perspective on love here. How do we increase these levels?
Well, I think the first thing is to recognize that as a culture, I think we've had a far too restrictive understanding of love, that we've limited it to, you know, our soulmate or our family or you know, best friend or our pet maybe, but we kind of leave it at home. And I think in doing that, we are severely cutting off our opportunities for creating healthier environments wherever we go, because what the science is suggesting is that any moment of shared positive emotion has these qualities, and whether you call them love or not, it's important to recognize that, oh, wait, those are the moments that are really making a difference. It's not just that they feel good. They're actually like vitamins, the nutrients in food. So if we give them more respect like that, that's the first thing, is that, oh, we can lean in towards them and not, you know, miss out altogether. So that's one thing. And then another is to just find more ways where you could see other people experiencing good fortune or good news, and, you know, instead of just walking by, join in. Those are just, you know, extraordinarily small ways where we can just change our daily habits to say, oh, okay, there's some of the good stuff happening here. Let me join in, or let me try to create some of that.
Great. Well, you know from our own practices and research that we're very focused on recognition and appreciating others. How does this relate in your research, and why is it important?
Well, I think that expressing appreciation, especially when you're able to do it, you know, face-to-face, really is one way to create a micro moment of shared connection, shared positivity. You could just re-describe that same moment as a moment of love. Now, again, whether you call it appreciation or call it love, doesn't matter, as long as you recognize that that's an extraordinarily potent moment. And this could be why expressing appreciation is so important. I mean, perhaps far more important than just writing down your appreciations in your own private gratitude journal, you know, being able to express them to the people that inspired you to feel that way is where the real healthy action takes place from this perspective.
That's super good, and I think we certainly resonate with that. So can we make celebrations with other people more meaningful through what your science is discovering?
Yeah, I think if you see this, the thread of these micro moments of positivity resonance as being the key active ingredients in what's going to make a celebration ritual really take off, you might think a little differently about how you do those celebration rituals and in ways to try to get them to bring people together, find ways to create sort of an automatic or a natural kind of form of biobehavioral synchrony. Just kind of look at the celebration rituals that you already have and see if they have the elements, the three elements of positivity resonance that I'm talking about, like people at the same time sharing a positive emotion, not sequentially or not in parallel, but really sharing it. And, in a way that they feel a moment of warmth and tenderness for each other or care and have some of that synchrony. So you could kind of evaluate what you do already and see if it has those elements. If it does, great. If it doesn't, you know, try to rethink what you're doing to see if you can get more of those elements in.
Wow, certainly just great to put the whole more science to all of this. I mean, it's one thing to know that we are talking about a subject such as appreciation that makes people feel good, but sometimes that concept of feel good is seen as negative, as being touchy-feely. Any parting thought before we close off this section for how you could tell leaders to not be caught up with the touchy-feely, but realize this makes a difference?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, positivity sometimes gets a bad rap because people think that you're trying to paper over all the realism, the real bad news just with a, you know, yellow smiley face or something. And that couldn't be further from what the advice here is, you know, that positivity is only helpful if it's honest and sits side by side with, you know, necessary negativity and honest negativity. So it's not like you're trying to crowd one out in favor of the other. But if you miss the opportunity to capitalize on the human evolved psychological benefits of positive emotions, you really miss out.
Well, I know that our listeners are not missing out with these wonderful insights today, Barbara. But we're going to take another quick break. I can't believe time's going by so fast. But join us back in a few minutes on Rideau's Real Recognition Radio as we continue to ask more questions of Dr. Barbara Fredrickson and about Love 2.0. For Rideau's Real Recognition Radio, I'm Roy Saunderson, along with Max Brown.
Follow us on Twitter at VoiceAmericaTRN. Get the lowdown on guests, new shows, and your favorites. That's VoiceAmericaTRN.
The next generation of employees is more sophisticated about recognition. They want to make a difference to their organizations, to their environment, and to their world. Rideau offers a full suite of recognition and reward solutions tailored to meet our clients' needs strategically, technologically, and globally. Rideau's clients are Intel, RBC Financial, Boeing, and Liberty Mutual. Together, Rideau and our clients create better workplaces, better businesses, and ultimately, a better world. Become a Rideau client. Find us at rideau.com. Rideau is the proud sponsor of Real Recognition Radio.
How do you become one of the best companies to work for? By appreciating people for who they are and recognizing them for what they do. That's real recognition. 82% of employees say that recognition or praise they receive at work motivates them to improve their performance. And companies who recognize their people outperform companies that don't by 30 to 40%. Those are real results. Become one of the best companies to work for. The Recognition Management Institute can help you get the results you need. For more information, visit realrecognition.com. That's realrecognition.com.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Real Recognition Radio with Roy Saunderson and S. Max Brown. This is what recognition is all about: getting real results in the workplace through meaningful recognition solutions. Now, let's get back to the program. Here are Roy and Max.
Welcome back to Rideau's Real Recognition Radio with Roy Saunderson and myself, Max Brown, and of course our guest today, Dr. Barbara L. Fredrickson, Distinguished Professor of Psychology at the University of North Carolina and the author of Love 2.0. Barbara, we were talking about how appreciation in the workplace is so important in that last segment with Roy, and I was grateful for what you were saying around this. What would you say about for people that work it remotely, particularly those who don't see each other very often? How could they connect more effectively with each other when what you're talking about is this physical presence brings this resonance and this elevation? What can people that are working remotely do?
Yeah, that is a definite challenge because so much of, we as a whole society, we're used to connecting and friending, you know, through the screens that and keyboards that sit in front of us instead of through, you know, face-to-face. And what this evidence suggests is that there's a real critical importance to having some sort of physical connection. Now, there seems to be a special privileging of eye contact in that eye contact seems to be a key gateway through which people catch each other's emotions. And so that's how we know whether somebody's being sincere or not, or how we can, if they are being sincere, how we can join in and kind of share a wave of biobehavioral synchrony and positivity resonance with them. eye contact seems to be really key, but it's not the only doorway. Shared voice is also super important. You know, obviously, you know this being radio interviews, that you can actually have quite an emotional connection through voice. So if you work remotely, try to find times within the day where you can get on the phone or get on, you know, shared voice on the computer so that you really do have a flow of information. The reason voice works when texting or messaging doesn't is that so much information is communicated through the tone of your voice, of your bodily state, that, you know, you can hear in someone's voice if they're choked up or if they're exhilarated. I mean, so it's not just a different channel. It's a channel that brings the body into the conversation where it's not there otherwise. And, you know, a lot of times people ask me about, you know, shared images through, you know, video phones like Skype where you can video chat. And one of the struggles with that is that you're actually not quite making eye contact because your camera is looking, you know, somewhere in the top of your screen. And if you look at that, then you're not looking at the middle of the screen. So,
right.
You know, so you're actually, you've got face-to-face contact. But I think it's an open question about whether you can actually catch each other's emotions when the eye contact is off like that. So, you know.
That's a good observation. Good observation on that.
Yeah, and you know, we know something's a little off when we're trying to do that relative to actually sitting across from each other in a coffee shop.
Sure.
It's perhaps better than no visual image, but you know, it may not have the same psychological effect.
Boy, it's fascinating. And to me, I'm also fascinated by this idea that wisdom, you write, ebbs and flows with our emotions, meaning that when we're negative, you find that we're more narrow-minded and that anger really doesn't serve us that well when we want to create friendships.
Right.
I know that sounds, on the face of it, very like common sense, but what you're talking about is we actually get more narrow-minded as we get negative. Is that correct?
Right, yes. We have years and years of research now to show that emotions, and positive emotions in particular, change the way the brain works. That we tend to zero in on small details when we're feeling negative, and compared to when we feel neutral, when we're feeling positive, our minds expand, and we actually literally see more. Our peripheral vision expands, and so we're able to connect the dots and be more creative, be more flexible, and actually, one of the interesting things is just that in having that expanded awareness, people pull themselves out of their sort of narrow cocoon of self-absorption, and they notice, oh, there are other people here. And so positivity actually supports our ability to focus on other people and see their perspective, whereas when we're feeling neutral or negative, we're much less concerned with others, and we're much more self-absorbed.
Speaking of the self-absorption, because I'm thinking about listeners now who are going, my goodness, what do I do if my whole workplace is just so negative, and yet we're these supposed to be, you know, quote-unquote creative thinkers that just really are struggling with trying to return some kind of ideas. When we become so self-absorbed, when you think about egocentric or arrogant leaders, how does that actually destroy the business?
Well, you know, that's having that, you know, sense of, you know, my views are the only ones that are carrying the day, or just being that self-absorbed. I think there's a real cost to that in terms of unlocking the collective capacity of the organization. It's just a huge missed opportunity in terms of helping everybody else in the organization and the team rise up to be their best. And I think the ways out of that is that, you know, you can still continue to think, you know, you're really great, as long as you also think, who helps me look great? Who is it that, you know, helps me do what I do every day? Because, you know, if you imagine if you did the you know, It's a Wonderful Life kind of subtraction and took all those
sure.
people out of your day, would you actually be able to get by and look good if there wasn't this huge support team? This is especially true for leaders, a huge support team enabling them to do what they do. So if we just allow ourselves to recognize that huge web of people that work together to help us get to the good outcomes or to look good, that's one way to begin to open up to how important each of those people is and how vital their perspective and contributions are.
Yeah, it's fascinating. And I know on the face of it, this question might seem like a rhetorical, but is there any doubt in your mind that positivity, resonance, optimism, joy, and happiness are distinctly competitive advantages in the workplace?
You know, there is no doubt in my mind, but I think it's really critical that people... One way I like to say this is that a little knowledge of positive psychology can be a dangerous thing because
mm-hmm.
if people take this at a very superficial level and
yes.
they kind of paint on positivity or use it to mask or deny clear sources of negativity, then sort of all bets are off. You know, that's probably not going to be helpful in those situations.
Mm-hmm.
You really have to understand that positivity resonance and all these positive feelings need to be authentic. They need to be heartfelt. And they're not going to be shared unless they are. If you can recognize these features of the way humans are built, this is the way evolution designed how we connect with one another and work best together and become healthier together. If you can understand how just this aspect of human nature, you can really use it to competitive advantage.
What do you recommend in that regard? What would you say an organization or particularly a leader to listening today who says, okay, I do want to be more sincere about this, I see the value in it, but I don't want to come across as that inauthentic and destroy it or make it worse. Literally, what should I do to take some right steps forward?
Yeah. You know, what I recommend in Love 2.0 is a number of preparatory activities. It's kind of ironic in that, you know, when I suggest the how-to here, I don't have hardly any suggestions that have to do with, okay, this is what you do when you're with somebody. All of the things are things we can do on our own before we're interacting with others. And the reason to focus on these, what I call preparatory activities or these different ways to change your mindset before you're in interaction is so that you can come to interaction with far more sincerity and authenticity. And I have a mix of micro-moment practices, I call them, and meditation practices. The reason I focus so heavily on meditation in this book is that I have, you know, a 6-7 year research program that I've been carrying out where I'm looking at the effects of one particular kind of meditation that really got me to change my whole views on love is an ancient practice called loving kindness meditation. And we find that people who are open to learning meditation and they focus on this particular kind of meditation, it leads to phenomenal changes in health and in ways of connecting with people in daily life. It's really a potent practice. Some people don't like the idea of meditation. They would never see themselves taking 15 minutes a day for something new. You know, they can hardly find another spare minute.
Right.
So we have other practices in what I call micro-moment practices that I describe in the book where you just take a minute to think over your day and think of, you know, the three longest connections that you've had in that day and just evaluate how connected or attuned did you feel to those people. And that just making this a daily reflection, again, for just a moment each day, also seems to have a potent effect. Not as potent as meditation, we've found, because we have the research on each of these practices, but it's a start. And it's a start in the right direction. And it can inspire people to make more of their connections real ones where they get to share in a moment of caring and concern rather than just, you know, handing out the next assignment or the next order.
Yes. Yes, I really appreciated that. We've actually spoken with some meditation practitioners on this show in the past, including, you know, Roy, who comes to mind, is Chade Meng Tan.
Oh, of course,
Meng.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He wrote a book called Search Inside Yourself. He's a Google executive.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And Meng is really great, too, and in, particularly around this meditation aspect.
Right, right. I've shared some ideas on this with Meng, and they're really super compatible, really super compatible. I really love what he's doing.
I do, too, and I agree. In fact, when I read your book, I felt like you guys have this very synergistic effect anyway, but it is very nice. And is there anything that surprised you from your research in this new research?
You know, one of the things that has surprised me is how deeply the effects of feeling socially connected or socially isolated can go. And one of the places that we're beginning to see that is in the cells of the immune system. We're looking right now at how feelings of connection relate to changes in gene expression in the immune system. So it's like a one way at a cellular level that our bodies are keeping track of our recent history of connection or loneliness. And so those, to me, is, you know, when I look at that, I think this is real. I can't believe this is really there. Well, we predicted it, but it's still, I'm amazed that we as scientists can get at this level of effects of emotions. And that's what keeps me going, is to be able to document the physical benefits of positivity and positivity resonance at this level.
Yeah, it's fascinating. I mean, the fact that just because, and I don't mean just because, but the fact that we actually connect, that we actually have better social connections, we actually are healthier, we live better, we actually have better immunity.
Right, right. You know, there's been circumstantial evidence for that idea for decades, but how it is that our, you know, relationships and connections actually affect our health has been one of the great mysteries of science. You know, we've seen the correlations, but
yes,
we've never been able to explain the pathway. But that pathway is becoming illuminated more and more each month, it seems like, in the last year or two.
No, it's so big. It's so big. I just can't imagine the ramifications this has for leaders who want to improve the workplace and do it in a more meaningful way. We have to take a quick break. I am so grateful for this conversation. Please come back for our final segment with Dr. Barbara Fredrickson. For Rideau's Real Recognition Radio, this is Max Brown and Roy Saunderson reminding you to keep it real. We'll be right back.
Think you've seen everything there is to see in online television? Let us surprise you. Visit voiceamerica.tv today for sports, health, business, and more on demand 24/7.
Relationships are the core of great businesses. Your employees are critical to the success of your business. Rideau helps you build positive relationships with your people. Rideau helps you inspire greatness in your people. We do it through the power of recognition and rewards. Rideau's clients are Intel, RBC Financial, Boeing, and Liberty Mutual. We're committed to our clients and our people. Together, Rideau and our clients create better workplaces, better businesses, and ultimately, a better world. Become a Rideau client. Find us at rideau.com. Rideau is the proud sponsor of Real Recognition Radio.
How do you become one of the best companies to work for? By appreciating people for who they are and recognizing them for what they do. That's real recognition. 82% of employees say that recognition or praise they receive at work motivates them to improve their performance. And companies who recognize their people outperform companies that don't by 30 to 40%. Those are real results. Become one of the best companies to work for. The Recognition Management Institute can help you get the results you need. For more information, visit realrecognition.com. That's realrecognition.com.
Voice America Business Network. The bottom line in business.
You're listening to Real Recognition Radio with Roy Saunderson and S. Max Brown. This is what recognition is all about, getting real results in the workplace through meaningful recognition solutions. Now, let's get back to the program. Here are Roy and Max.
Welcome back to Rideau's Real Recognition Radio. We're going to finish off our conversation today with Dr. Barbara Fredrickson and learn some just final pointers on Love 2.0. And, you know, Barbara, it's just great stuff. I don't know. Max knows that when we're on these shows, my notes are all over the script pages here. You know, I've been writing furiously here. And I know that a lot of people are going to be wondering, okay, you talked about those micro moment of practices. Maybe this meditation piece isn't going to always resonate with some people, but what can leaders start doing today to make their workplaces better?
Yeah, no, I think that the main thing sometimes can be to just, you know, get off your chair and walk around and connect with people when you can. Recognize that how you open a meeting, for example, can be an opportunity for connection and sharing, or it could just be a moment where you erase everybody and get down to business. there's opportunities right there. I mean, one of the things that, as this work has come together, it's gotten me to change the way that I open my, you know, weekly staff meetings or lab meetings. And we do a quick appreciation ritual. You know, what thing that we need to give voice to that day that we've been appreciating, something from our own lives or somebody in the group, you know. So it's just whatever. It's kind of wide open, but it gives a way to have a moment that's human, where we recognize each other as fully human before we get down to work, because it's so easy to feel so pressed by that. And, you know, now we all come to really appreciate our appreciation ritual. Even though it takes time away from, you know, other business, we realize that, you know, we just don't feel like we're who we are unless we have a chance to do that. So those are small things that we can do. I mean, and then the other thing is to, take those micro moment practices that are those preparatory activities, and you know, just take a moment to think about, you know, what in your own life could you celebrate, you know, as, you know, something that helps you feel safe and secure and able to connect with others. Because a lot of times we avoid connection because we ourselves are not feeling particularly safe. Mm. So there's a lot of message that I put in this book around how to be compassionate and loving to the self, because that's an important base from which, you know, all the rest of the stuff grows. So
it's just wonderful stuff that I'm hearing, Barbara, and it certainly resonates with what we see in practice. What I'm loving is the science connection without being so academic that it's not meaningful.
Yeah, my goal in this book was to give you the digestible science. you know, if people want to read the peer review direct articles, they can. They're on my website too. You know,
right.
So a lot of people won't read those. So that's why I'm inspired to write these books, to give away what we're learning in science to a wider audience.
Well, that's wonderful. We're very grateful for you to have done that. That's for sure. Barbara, you know, is the next research, is there a Love 3.0 coming along the way?
You know, I realize that 2.0 title just invites there to be, you know, endless upgrades, right? Well,
right.
Where my own research is going next is I'm working on how to use what I know about Positivity Residence, Love 2.0, and positivity more generally as a way to understand lifestyle change. I mean, we know as a culture that we're not physically active enough, we're not eating right, we're not managing our emotions and our time well. You know, so many of us, especially in midlife, are in this realization that I need to change. And so what we are looking at in my lab is how people can use positive emotions as a non-conscious ingredient that helps fuel lifestyle change. We know that simply telling people, this is how to eat, this is how to be active, this is how to, you know, arrange your day, doesn't work. You know, lifestyle change is not successful when taken through conscious willpower. We need to try to find a way to hook us in through non-conscious experiences and emotions. Positive emotions, I think, can be that. And so what I'm working on now is what I call an upward spiral model of lifestyle change. So that's what will be probably the topic of the next one.
Wonderful. Well, listen, for our listeners who we're running out of time here, Barbara, but I want to make sure our listeners have an opportunity to know how they can learn more about your great work and connect with you.
Sure. We have a website for this book where you can learn a lot. It's www.positivityresonance.com. One word, positivityresonance.com. And that there I have guided meditations that people can use for free, and you know, just as a way to get started. And I have some tools that people can use to track changes over time, and also just information about some of these ideas. And so I invite people to check that out, positivityresonance.com.
Wonderful. Well, I know it's been a positive experience for us, and we certainly want to just personally thank you for joining us on the Real Recognition Radio today.
Oh, thank you so much. It was great to be here, Roy.
Sure, grateful to have you. Thank you so much again, and look forward to connecting with you in the future as well.
All right. Thanks, Max.
Thank you so much.
Well, if people would like to learn more about our wonderful guests that are coming up, or just be able to provide us with some insights on discussions and topics, we want you to reach out to rido.com/radio, because Max and I would love to be able to hear from you and get your comments and suggestions. So visit us at rido.com, that's rideau.com/radio, and give us your feedback and tell us why you listen to Rideau's Real Recognition Radio. We'll send you a small token of appreciation. We certainly look forward to hearing from you. And you can check out our past shows at Rideau's Real Recognition Radio Library at rideau.com. Thanks for listening to us. And for more information about Rideau's Recognition Management Institute, you can visit us at rideau.com. Until next time, I'm Roy Sonneson, along with my friend Max Brown, reminding you to keep it real.
Thank you again for tuning in Real Recognition Radio. Please join Roy Sonneson and Max Brown again next Tuesday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel for more motivational tips to help your employees perform better. We'll talk again next week.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.